While the arrival of the novel coronavirus has demanded much of the public health attention in New York for more than a year, the state is still coping with a whole host of other public health concerns, such as the spread of hepatitis C, the campaign to end AIDS, HIV, and the need for widespread vaccinations. On today's show, we're shining a light on the effort to help New Yorkers suffering from drug or alcohol addiction, which can easily be thrown off track by any bumps in the road to recovery. So anything that can be done to smooth out the process increases chances of success for those obtaining treatment. To that end, State Senator Pete Harcum, a Westchester County Democrat who chairs the Chamber's Committee on Alcoholism and Substance Abuse, has introduced legislation to remove transportation as one of those barriers to recovery. To explain the bill, we spoke with Senator Harcum shortly after the companion legislation was introduced in the Assembly. Welcome back to the show, Senator. It's great to see you in person, as we are both members of the growing vaccination club.
It's nice to be back in person.
So it's my understanding that this bill creates a demonstration program providing supportive transportation services to treatment. What is supportive transportation, and why is that part of a holistic approach to recovery?
Sure. When we did the tour of New York State in 2019 with the Task Force on Opioids, one of the things that we heard in both rural areas and also in urban areas was Medicaid transportation is limited. It might be just to treatment, but there's so many other areas in terms of going to doctor visits, going to employment, going to court dates. So really having holistic services are so critical to recovery, not just going to perhaps one aftercare appointment. So that's why we put the demonstration project together.
You said this is a problem across various regions. How does it manifest itself, say, in an urban area? I mean, I would imagine you could just hop on the subway. Is that not just the case?
Well, we know that in certain urban areas, we have transportation deserts. Mm-hmm. And we have an absence of real robust service in our upstate cities.
Right.
And we know in portions of New York City, out in Queens and other places, you can be miles before you get to a subway. So there are transportation deserts in both urban areas, and we certainly know about them in rural areas.
So when you talk about these services and what they would cover, can you sort of walk me through what you envision this demonstration program covering? Because what you mentioned earlier were a lot of things that aren't part of, you know, what people might think of as the ordinary course of recovery, which might be like driving to an AA meeting or a Narcotics Anonymous meeting or some sort of inpatient facility.
Right now, Medicaid will pay to transport somebody to traditional recovery, i.e. outpatient. But you said a number of things like going to a 12-step meeting, going grocery shopping, going to a doctor's appointment, getting to your employment. These are all of the things that you need for a stable life in order to support your recovery, and they're currently not covered by Medicaid at this juncture.
Why does it make sense to cover those? Why should the state or federal government be responsible for those costs as opposed to the individual who's, you know, going to be using them?
Well, because one, in many instances, those people don't have the funds. They're either unemployed or underemployed. They're getting back on their feet in early recovery. But the second is the cost to the state is much higher if we don't treat people. Prevention is always much less expensive, more cost effective than emergency rooms, hospitalizations, overdose. So, you know, prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Because Medicaid is a program with federal, state, and local costs, how do you envision this being paid for, at least in the early stages with this demonstration program?
Well, in the early stages, we've appropriated money in the budget. Mm-hmm. So there's money for the demonstration project. I think it's $850,000. There's going to be one rural and one urban, and those will be the starting points, and we'll determine what the benchmarks of success are as we put the plan together with OASIS.
So will it be OASIS that's going to be responsible for crafting sort of the rules and regulations for
this? Exactly. It will be OASIS who will be responsible because they're the ones who know all of the supports that are needed to go into a successful recovery.
When this is implemented and you look back on it, how are you going to judge the success of the program?
I think we judge the success on, you know, are we rebuilding people's lives? Are they able to maintain some longer-term recovery? Are they able to get back to work? Are they able to stay healthy out of hospitals, out of other institutions. Those are the kind of things that we're going to be looking for. And ultimately, that's going to be saving the state money.
And how long do you envision this demonstration program running before you have enough information to determine whether it should potentially go statewide or just be scrapped altogether?
Well, I think you need at least a year. You've got to get it up and running. You've got to have a control sample of folks who you're following to see how successful they may be.
When could this potentially start? Because I noticed that this exists as standalone legislation, but you mentioned there was money in the budget for this. Is this something that is already taken care of now?
Well, we still need to pass the legislation.
Okay.
Because we want to make sure the money that's been appropriated is used appropriately and that the intent of the legislature is honored as we go forward.
So what is sort of the timeline, say, if you take care of this authorizing language, you know, before the end of session in June, then, you know, what do you envision as the timeline for OASIS and writing rules and regs and actually starting to transport people?
Well, we would hope throughout the rest of the year that the rules and regs can be put together, and then hopefully early next year we can start going out into the field with something.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about legislation that would create a demonstration program of transportation services for New Yorkers trying to access drug and alcohol treatment. And we're speaking with the bill's sponsor, State Senate Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Committee Chair Pete Harkham. This program comes at a time during a pandemic where we've seen the opioid crisis really just take advantage of, you know, the, kind of the lack of focus, because obviously attention has been elsewhere. When you think about the need for something like this, can you quantify how important something like this is right now in New York's history as we're trying to battle the opioid epidemic?
Sure. You know, as you said, we are at record levels of overdose, depression, despair, isolation, substance use disorder in general is through the roof in addition to opioids. And we need a holistic set of supports. You know, when I entered early recovery back in the 80s, I had access to transportation, access to healthcare, access to employment, access to aftercare, all of the successful things, the things you need for a successful recovery. A lot of people don't have access to those, and that's what we're trying to do with the transportation.
Why, in your case, did you have access for it?
I, you know, if you want to talk about privilege, I worked at an ad agency. I had insurance at the time. I had family supports. I lived in a neighborhood that had transportation where I could get to where I needed to go. And unfortunately, some people don't have those supports. I was very fortunate.
While you were accessing services, did you have to get accommodations from work, or did you just fit that in aside from everything? How did that fit into your life?
Well, and you know, in the beginning, there was inpatient, and then aftercare, which was outpatient, and some of that was after work. There were accommodations made. My employers were great at the time that I would step out midday for 12-step meetings. During my lunch hour, they were very accommodating, but I had those supports and a lot of people don't. And that's why we need this transportation pilot, so people can get to work, they can get to aftercare, they can get to 12 steps, they can get to medical appointments, they can do what they need to do to be successful.
Once this is up and running, do you anticipate that there's going to be enough transportation infrastructure in communities all over the state? Well, in these limited two instances, at least for initially, to provide the transportation? Are there drivers available in rural communities to handle this type of stuff?
Well, that's what we need to determine.
Okay.
You know, we know you need mass to have mass transit, and there is not mass transit in large parts of the state. So then it goes to local cab drivers, Uber, Lyft, those kinds of things. So we will leave it to the folks at OASIS to come up with the rules, and we will see what the program looks like.
And finally, you know, looking forward, we have a little more than 2 months to go in the legislative session. Anything else that you're really focused on as you're in your purview as chairman of the Committee on Alcoholism and Substance Abuse?
Sure, there's a lot. We need to continue to look at the merger of OASIS and OMH. That will provide a more again opportunity for holistic treatment of folks, especially with co-occurring disorders. We're also looking at curtailing the power of the Inspector General, who uses administrative errors to extrapolate huge fines against providers, and in fact, in some cases, putting them out of business, which is exactly the opposite of what we want to be doing in the middle of a pandemic. We need to change how New York State reports overdose deaths. We are often quarters behind in our reporting, and that limits the ability of our providers to target areas and resources where we see hotspots. So we've got a lot of work that we need to do.
You mentioned that merger of OMH, the Office of Mental Health, and OASIS, which deals with alcoholism and substance abuse. I kind of figured that was a done deal in the budget since the governor was supporting it. I know you were supportive of it. Does that just mean the state assembly wasn't on board and that was why it didn't, you know, make it into the final budget?
They have a policy of taking things out of the budget that don't necessarily have a fiscal implication. Mm-hmm. We thought it did because you're merging two agencies. Yeah. But, you know, so much of this now is about co-occurring disorders, and patients have to navigate two separate bureaucracies, separate funding streams, in some cases separate treatment providers, and it's not really the state of the art of care when we're dealing with co-occurring disorders.
I was surprised at how supportive activists and provider groups were of this merger, of this proposed merger, because, you know, I come from that cynical view that if you take two agencies and put it into one, well, why don't we cut a little bit of their budgets? And, you know, they might be concerned about that. But it doesn't seem like people were, you know, concerned about that potential avenue with regards to this merger.
Well, because it's not a merger designed to save money. Mm-hmm. It's a merger designed to improve patient care. And if down the road there are administrative efficiencies, those should be put back into the agency and into patient care.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator Pete Harcum. He is a Westchester County Democrat and chair of the Senate's Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Committee. Senator, thank you so much for making the time, and great to see you in person.
Great to see you. Thanks so much for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.